Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 64. The materialistic philosophy of the cessation of existence is completely untenable, for it has not decided on the nature of the individual person. If the individual persons are merely creations of matter, then one falls into the philosophy accepting only material pleasures as important. That is pure atheism, right? So if we say we're created from matter or from illusion, then that means you're not actually accepting, how you say, spiritual pleasure. Because we're made from matter, so there isn't something separate, right? Because we don't exist as something separate. So why should we as an individual be endeavoring for something that's not us? And we're not going to be around to experience it anyway, right? Because if you don't exist, then you're not going to, one, experience the transcendental happiness, but it's also another category. What's the need? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, it's just pure atheism that there's no connection with God, no purpose, no nothing. Just everything's just void. You can see it's a totally nihilistic aspect. So you see, some of them have a more pleasant flavor, you know, mood and all that, and some of them have a less pleasant. Yeah. The ones that are purely nihilistic, so they'll always be grumpy all the time. Well, the other ones can be pleasant and nice and everything like that, but ultimately then they're all nihilist.
But Maharaj, actually, if they don't accept the soul, if the thing comes from matter, so what is the explanation of the desire to have material pleasure?
I guess they're just taking it from matter, so naturally you just, you know, interact with matter. Right? But that's the point, is that you wouldn't have an interest in spiritual.
Yes.
Yeah. So, if the soul are creations of matter, then they're matter, and so then matter with matter, what's the matter with matter interacting with matter?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's the problem, is in the philosophy there, is that the reason it comes up is because the soul identifies as something separate from matter, as spirit. And so therefore then the nature, because their spirit, then they would enjoy within the spiritual platform, and enjoying within the material platform, that's the cause of the problem. Right? Does that make sense? So then you get what's halfway in between, is that, okay, they accept the spiritual, but that's all. So it's basically just a void spiritualness.
Yes.
Right? Yes. And so then the idea of that liberation.
Yes.
And so then they're just touching on the Vedic understanding, but the point is that they don't accept themselves as an individual. Then, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, how can they enjoy being liberated because they don't exist as an individual? So it's fruitless on that. So then the point comes down is that you want to enjoy, you want to be engaged in enjoying like this, that perception of. So perceiving, it means there has to be two. Does that make sense? So then that means then there indicates there must be a spiritual or transcendental position in which living entities are interacting. But it's on the spiritual platform, and it should give happiness rather than here where the interaction creates distress.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so it's just a natural, logical point. You know, so you can see is that when you're dealing with the mundane aspects, you can use logic.
Yes.
But when you're dealing with the spiritual, logic actually isn't the working element. It means logic can be engaged. It's not that logic will not be satisfied with the philosophical explanations of transcendence. You know, it's just like the ear is satisfied by hearing, but it's not because of the ear you're able to perceive transcendental.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, but because the material is made of these things, and then intelligence being there, then you can logically explain what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Means what's wrong with their philosophies.
Mm-hmm.
But to understand, you know, what to do to actually correct it, then you have to have the transcendental vision.
Mm-hmm.
So this way they can argue with each other and try to establish who's more, you know, who's the superior philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense? So we can defeat theirs with logic, but you can't establish the transcendental with logic.
Yes.
That's only by mercy.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
But if, on the other hand, the individual persons are different from matter, independent of the transformations of matter. So this is all in the Tattva Vivek?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Independent of the transformations of matter, then how will they cease to exist? Right? Because the material existence may cease, but why would the individual cease if they're something different from matter, independent from matter? So the cessation of the problems of the material energy does not necessitate the destruction of the individual. Does that make sense? Because they're taking it that we want to get rid of material problems, we have to get rid of the material and ourselves. But you don't. You just have to get rid of the material. Why do you have to get rid of yourself?
And the philosophy of total destruction, they want to stop their existence.
Right.
So then they are unaware of the eternality aspect.
Right,
so,
right.
So what is their destination? Then? Where do they go then?
They don't go anywhere, because there'd have to be designations to go somewhere. It's just void. The example is given, you just blow out a candle. That's it. It's done. See, in other words, never try to make sense out of what they're saying, because it doesn't make sense.
No, not their part, from our point of view. From the Vaishnava philosophy, now then what will be their destination?
But then you have to ask that as a question.
Mm-hmm.
What is their destination? I heard the Chutananda Maharaj say that the Buddhists, then they get stuck in the Garbhodak mud. Under the Garbhodak Ocean, there's some dirt, mud. So they got stuck in there. Then they can think that there's nothing. Where that came from, I'm not sure, but I heard him say that.
Yeah. Isn't it pleasant to be stuck in the mud?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, the difference between because being a stick in the mud's not good, but being stuck in the mud may be okay. You know, especially if it's kind of cozy and warm and all that, then it's okay.
So Krishna says that, no, you be my devotee, and if you can't do this, at least you be a good person. Not you be a Mayavadi.
Right.
He doesn't speak even of Buddhists because they don't even exist.
Yeah, they don't exist, so how can he be a Buddhist? Yeah. Yeah, because according to their philosophy, they don't exist. So if that's the case, then you can always step in front of them in the line, right? Because they don't exist. Yeah. Okay. Is there any evidence that non-material persons or spirit souls ever cease to exist? There's no evidence. It's just they're just saying that. But there's nothing to define that. Right? The Shastra never says. Do we see any Upanishadic quote where it says you cease to exist? Right? You may give up the sense of possession. You may give up false identity. You know, so many things may go away. But it never says you don't exist. That's just then their natural thing that they take. In the end, all these philosophies are complete atheism.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they're not connected to the Lord. When you connect something to the Lord, then it's not complete. It may be atheistic, but you're accepting the laws of nature or something like that. So they're an atheist. But they don't accept God, but they accept God's laws. Right? Or even more, as they accept the Vedic, you know, literature and culture and all that, they'll follow the rules, which are Krishna's rules, right? The rules come from Krishna. And so they're atheists, but not complete atheists. But then in these philosophies, where they say there's no existence of the soul, then they're complete atheists. Because then there's nothing, right? Yes.
Maharaj, Jiva Goswami speaks about, like, Maya has two functions. One is called Gunamaya, which is the manifestation of Pradhan.
Okay.
Which gives facilities for the Jiva to lord over the material nature.
Okay.
And then there is Jiva Maya, which actually covers the Jiva.
Okay, yeah, the Jiva Kosha.
So basically, the karma, the time, everything acting through the modes on the living entity.
That's Jiva Maya.
That's the Jiva Maya.
Okay, and then the phenomena that's here, then that's
Gunamaya.
Okay, but what's controlled by the modes and everything?
Yeah. So it seems that all the Vedic six schools which we talked about, they accept the three modes and the whole Jiva Maya also and the Gunamaya also.
Mm-hmm.
But when we fall below that, then only Pradhan, like how the Jiva can.
So it means the Jiva is not included, so there is no Jiva Maya. They just merge the two.
Yeah, basically, the three modes, how they're acting on a Jiva, I think only the six schools accept that.
Mm.
And then anything below that, the Buddhism and all, no one accepts.
Okay, so they just attribute all these, all the aspects of Jiva Maya and that to material energy or the phenomena or the illusion or whatever it is they call it. Yeah.
Because when we met, Atma Tattva Prabhupada said is that the three modes, the concept of three modes, only the Vedic schools, they speak
about. Oh, only they speak about it. Okay. Yeah, no one else speaks about it. If you mention acting in goodness, passion, they can relate to it, but it's not that they do. It's just like if you say love of God, then most religionists can relate to it, but they never really talk about it.
Seems like this is the subtler thing about the Jiva Maya, how Jiva is covered and he's controlled.
Yeah.
Everybody speak how Jiva is in control.
Yeah, okay. So then only the Vaishnavas really understand the two.
I mean, other six schools also speak little bit. But
little bit, but not much. So they'll accept the Guna Maya, but not know so much about the Jiva Maya.
Mm.
And then below that, they don't know either.
Mm.
And then Vaishnavas know both.
Mm.
Okay.
We came across just both aspects, Jiva Maya, Guna Maya, just before some time.
Okay. And the one where she covers and throws, that's all within Jiva Maya then?
Yes.
Okay. Those are the two functions in there. Okay. It was to stop the wickedness of the Karma Mimamsa idea that the preachers of these Nirvana philosophies preached their own ideas so fervently. Because of the Brahmins' oppressive ways and their embracing the Karma Mimamsa idea, the Kshatriyas and other castes became very disturbed and staged a philosophical revolt against the Brahmins. For this reason, the Kshatriyas all accepted Buddhism and the Vaishyas all accepted Jainism. Okay, so this is where it's from. This Prabhupada mentions this. When people divide into factions and hate each other in terms of those factional groupings, that hatred can become very strong.
Mm-hmm.
Passionately loyal to their faction, the people no longer give any thought to what ideas are logical or illogical, right? Because it's an identity. So when you deal with identity, it's false ego.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't actually have to be proven.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is how Buddhism and Jainism were spread in India. Right? Because then you identify, you just accept. They were also spread to other countries. Weak in spiritual reasoning, the people of those countries accepted those philosophies as sent by God. In Europe, some people who hated Christianity also preached the philosophy of Nirvana. That is revealed in history. Right? But it's not so popular. Christianity seemed to become the most prominent in Europe. So that's from Tattva Vivek. So, okay, that now we're on top here. Bhagavatam verse reference. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.20. The Supreme Lord, personality of Godhead, is himself this cosmos, and still he is aloof from it. From him only has this cosmic manifestation emanated. In him it rests, and into him it enters after annihilation. Your good self knows all about this. I have given only a synopsis. Okay, so this must be Narad Muni to Vyasadeva. Right, so there's this, okay, this important element of this non-difference of the Lord from the universe. Because otherwise they try to separate it off. They try to maintain one's own independence or maintain the mundane concept of good and bad in relation to God. Then you separate him from the creation so that it puts him in a good position. Because if anything's going wrong, then he'll be to blame. You don't want to blame God. You know, because that's considered wrong, so then you deify and shift him out beyond. But here, no, it's all him. It's all his potency, that's why it can work. But, now how it'll work is according to you. Does that make sense? You know, like that. You know, it's just like, the knife is made out of steel. Right? But depending on how you use the knife, if you follow the rules, it works nicely for you. You don't follow the rules, then, you know, problems come up. But because those problems come up, you can't blame the steel. Mm-hmm. Right? Does that make sense? You can't blame the creator of the knife. You can't blame all these things. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada explains that since the entire manifestation, material or spiritual, is an emanation from the Supreme Lord, it is the duty of the jiva to surrender and serve him. For a pure devotee, the conception of Mukunda, Lord Sri Krishna, is both personal and impersonal. The impersonal cosmic situation is also Mukunda because it is the emanation of the energy of Mukunda. For example, a tree is a complete unit, whereas the leaves and the branches of the tree are emanated parts and parcels of the tree. The leaves and branches of the tree are also the tree, but the tree itself is neither the leaves nor the branches. The Vedic version that the whole cosmic creation is nothing but Brahman means that since everything is emanating from the Supreme Brahman, nothing is apart from him. That's the point being made. So it's a Vaishnava point. Similarly, the part and parcel hands and legs are called the body, but the body as the whole unit is neither the hands nor the legs. Right? So it's simultaneously one and different. It is, but it's not. The Lord is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. And thus, the creation of the energy of the Lord appears to be partially eternal. Thus, the creation of the energy of the Lord appears to be partially eternal, full of knowledge and beauty also. Right? Because it's coming from him, so it has the cause and the effect. You see those qualities of the Lord there. Right? The captivated conditioned soul under the influence of the external energy, Maya, are therefore entrapped in the network of the material energy. So they're looking for Krishna, but then they see within the material energy itself. Right? They don't know how to look beyond that. And so they get caught up.
But now, for example, for beauty, when you see the world, there is a feeling of appreciation.
Yes, no, there is some beauty, there's some knowledge, you see there's elements of the eternity, that feeling is there, the concept, but it can't give the satisfaction of the soul.
What is missing?
The relationship with the person. So in other words, Krishna is pervading through everything in the impersonal. That's what's being appreciated.
Yes.
But it can't satisfy the soul because the soul is a person. You have to relate to a person.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? You know, it's like somebody comes up to you and starts having a whole conversation, you know, with your hand. You know, like you reach out your hand to shake hands and they say, yeah, you know, like that the other day. I haven't seen you for a while. And all, you know, it's like, yeah, that's the problem. Yeah. You know, unless they're a manicurist, then it's okay. But yeah.
In relation to this, in the British underwear, it's described about how something is actually dear to Lord. My own Swarupa, Lord says, my own Swarupa, because it is an emanation from, it is my own self. It is dear to me. And then Paramatma.
Means who? The material energy.
Lord.
The Lord.
First, he has his own Swarupa.
And that Swarupa is dear to him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Paramatma, which is an Amsha of Lord, is dear to him because it is his Amsha.
Okay.
And then the Jiva, who is in very proximity to Paramatma and is in relationship with Paramatma.
Okay.
That is why he is dear to the Lord.
Okay.
And the Prana, which exists in the body of Jiva, because it is related to the Jiva, it is also dear to the Lord. Like that, the relationship goes.
Okay, so everything is that it's connection to something is connected. So, yeah, so that whole. That's why if you're the servant of the servant of the servant, then that makes one dear. So for Krishna, it's not that the farther away it gets, there's a problem. He's not. He doesn't have that problem of lack of cognition or memory or gratefulness or anything like that. Okay, that's it.
Here it's explained in relationship.
Relationship, yes. Okay, yes. Mm-hmm. So does that make sense? So without relationship, then it doesn't. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So when you're only seeing it separate, that's the meaning of the separateness, or not seeing it, or the atheistic aspect, is that you're only seeing part.
Yes.
Like if I only accept your hand, it's technically atheistic because I'm not accepting you.
Yes.
Right? But the hand is part of you, but at the same time it's not. That's why there's some interest or some, how you say, satisfaction, because you're dealing with part.
Yes.
But at the same time as you're not dealing with the whole, so you as a whole can't be actually satisfied. So that's why it's always mentioned the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, probably never just says God or something. So now and again, because it's been mentioned in the same paragraph, they might say the Lord.
Yes.
Because it's already been established. So then you can do that. But it's always brought out the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yes.
Or even here he says the Supreme Lord Personality of Godhead. Just to make sure. So you have all three here in this one, right? You have the Supreme, his impersonal feature, the Lord, his Paramatma feature, and the Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan. Right, so. Okay. Kawadawa, Cholida. It's the way to go, right? The Lord is the transcendental form of eternity, cognition, and beauty. And thus, the creation of the energy of the Lord appears to be partially eternal, full of knowledge, and beautiful also. It's partially, because it's only a part of His energy. Right? The captivated conditioned souls under the influence of the external energy, Maya, are therefore entrapped in the network of the material nature. They accept this all, this as all in all. For they have no information of the Lord, who is the primeval cause. Nor have they information that the parts and parcels of the body, being detached from the whole body, are no longer the same hand or leg as when attached to the body. Right? So, when it's attached, then it has value, it does so many things. When it's detached, then it doesn't work so well. Right? If it does, then change the channel. You're watching the wrong movie. Right? Similarly, a godless civilization detached from the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is just like a detached hand or leg. Such parts and parcels may appear like hands and legs, but they have no efficiency. Right? Just in the contemporary environment, you never see zombies running a business or, you know, doing something practical in society. Right? The devotee of the Lord, Srila Vyasadeva, knows this very well. He is further advised by Srila Narada to expand the idea so that the entrapped conditioned souls may take lessons from him to understand the Supreme Lord as the primeval cause. Right, so that's the idea. Expand this. That's how you get then the Bhagavatam. Oh, today's Ras Purnima, so they're going to have lots of people. Yeah. According to the Vedic version, the Lord is naturally fully powerful, and thus his supreme energies are always perfect and identical with him.
Identical.
Fun part, no one even cares.
They defeat the purpose of the battery. It is made so that you make no sound. And
then they make so much sound, yeah. Okay, so many people that normally just one or two beeps, and now they really have to go for it. Okay. But both the spiritual and material skies and their paraphernalia are emanations of the internal and external energies of the Lord. External energy is completely comparatively inferior, whereas the internal potency is superior. Right? So comparatively inferior means it's unlimited. And it's so powerful, but compared to the internal, it's inferior.
Yes.
Yeah, compared to us, it's a touch bigger.
Yes.
Right. The superior energy is living force, and therefore she is completely identical, but the external energy, being inert, is partially identical. That's the whole thing. That's why I say it's partially, because it's not fully, because it's not conscious.
Yes.
So because Krishna is conscious, his energy is, his internal potency is conscious, therefore they're identical.
Yes.
Right? But, you know, different. Otherwise, why make the distinction? But we're pointing out how the living entity becomes overwhelmed by the material energy is because of that partiality that it's like Krishna.
Yes.
So we see that. Since we're in the secondary, then the secondary still is coming from Krishna. It will have those elements that are like Krishna.
Yes.
So we're attracted by those elements that are like Krishna.
Yes.
Right? The parts that are not like Krishna, that's the parts that we don't really like. The temporariness and ignorance and lack of beauty and all these things. That's what we don't like, right? We like everything to be very nice.
Yes. Right. In that sense, all jiva are supposed to go back to Godhead.
Yes, they will. Passion. They will. It's just time.
It's time.
How long can you stay here?
Yes.
It's just some may be a little more stubborn than others, but you know, it's all the living entities go back to Godhead. Like that. So it's not a problem. But because Krishna's creation is, you know, Krishna, the cosmos is always expanding. Krishna is ever expanding. Therefore, there's more jivas to take part in the. And it's not that the material world gets smaller or bigger. It's always one quarter of unlimited. So as the spiritual world expands on that, on the three aspects, the material world is expanding on the one. So in that way, it just gets, you know, more and more unlimited. It's already unlimited. It just gets more unlimited. And that's God. It's just the way He is. But both the energies are neither equal to nor greater than the Lord, who is the generator of all energies, which such energies are always under His control, exactly as electrical energy, however powerful it may be, is always under the control of the engineer.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's always like that. Though, by speculation, then you'll think it becomes equal or takes over and all that. And so then they, you know, many, many storylines are based on this where, you know, something takes over and all that. But, you know, what's the purpose? Why would dead matter care?
Mm-hmm.
Right? There has to be living force.
Yes.
They'll take it that because they're thinking the soul comes from matter. So therefore, the soul being made of matter, and you call them living, then matter also could become conscious just like we are, and therefore then do all the things that we do. You know, just, does that make sense? But In any case, it doesn't make any sense because the soul doesn't come from matter. So these the point is the energies always are under the control of the energetic. The human being and all other living beings are products of his internal energies. Thus, the living being is also identical with the Lord. But he is never equal to or superior to the personality of Godhead. The Lord and living entities are all individual persons. With the help of the material energies, the living beings are also creating something. Right? Just like Krishna does, but they still have to take help from. They can't do it on their own. Right? But none of their creations are equal or superior to the creations of the Lord. Right? But the point is it goes like the child wants to do something. Right? They have some idea that they want to do something. But they can't do it on their own. The parent helps and all that. But then the child does something. Who gets the credit?
Right?
The child. Right? And as long as the child stays in that child mode, then it's cute, it's nice, it's attractive, everybody supports that. But if they think that now that they're better than everybody and they do better in their artwork, you know, my artwork's, you know, displayed on the refrigerator, what, you know, what artwork you got on the fridge, I didn't see any there, you know, like that, you know, so then, you know, then there's a problem. Then you have to point out, well, actually, there is the Louvre. Like that.
And that, you really don't like the children.
Huh?
Very often the child, they don't like.
No, they don't like. Well, you know why? Because there's no refrigerators there. There's no place to display your art.
Yeah.
Now that would be an interesting wing, right?
Yeah.
That just refrigerators with all that art on the refrigerator.
And you cannot play.
Huh?
And you cannot play in the room.
Yeah, yeah. Then this area you can play and everything. And snacks, you can open the refrigerator. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Yeah, it could be an interesting one. Okay, so they're identical with the Lord, but not equal to. You know, just like the drop of water from the ocean is equal, is identical with the ocean, but not equal to the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that makes sense. You have to know where it is. That's where the Mayavadis and others, then they think we're equal. No, you're identical, not equal.
Yes.
That, yeah. But, okay. With the help of the material energies, the living entities are also creating something, but none of their creations are equal or superior to the creations of the Lord. The human being may create a small, playful Sputnik and may throw it into outer space, but that does not mean that he can create a planet like the Earth or Moon and float it in the air as the Lord does. Men with a poor fund of knowledge claim to be equal to the Lord. They are never equal to the Lord. This is never to be. It just won't. Because even you say, oh no, we can create a planet, but can you create the whole planet, so the whole planetary system? Can you create the... No. So it's not, you know. So the whole point is they can't do these things. The human being, after attaining complete perfection, may achieve a large percentage of the qualities of the Lord. Say up to 78%. Say up to, let's just take that as it. Because if you say up to 78, then you go, whoa, whoa, you know, if you say up to, you know, then, okay.
Yes.
That's the thing. Language is so.
Yes.
You know.
It can start at 1%.
Yeah, yeah. But it is never possible to surpass the Lord or become equal with him. In a diseased condition only, the foolish being claims to be one with the Lord and thus becomes misled by the illusory energy. Right? So then that'll be the Jiva Maya, right? So they become misled by the material energy. So the situations that are there, that's the Guna Maya. But that your illusion by it, that's the Jiva Maya. So the living entity that's liberated, then there's no more Jiva Maya. It doesn't mean that the Guna Maya is not there. The material world goes on. But he sees it all and connects to the Lord, so even for him it's not illusion.
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah.
What?
The misguided living beings therefore must accept the supremacy of the Lord and agree to render loving service to Him. For this they have been created. Right? That's their nature. And He reciprocates on that same place. If you're identical, He's going to reciprocate on the same place. But He's greater, so His reciprocation is going to be greater than whatever we can offer. Like that. Right? Because it's not about being greater, it's about being identical. So the child acts as in a childish way, but on that equal identity as a member of the family and all that, then it's very much appreciated. But if they see themselves as separate and have attitude and all that and think that they're better, or, you know, you're ruining my life, or, you know, all that stuff, then it doesn't have any meaning anymore. Yes.
Maharaj, out of the 64 qualities of Lord, two are considered as main. First one is this, that Lord is moved by the jiva's reciprocation with Him. What is that mentioned about? Agree, and render loving devotional service. So one of the quality of Lord is, He is moved by this loving service of the devotee. And the second quality of Lord, because of His mood, He becomes controlled by His devotee.
Even though, if you accept His supremacy, He becomes controlled.
Basically, it's like you are rendering loving devotional service. It is considered some sort of preeti for Lord.
Okay.
If you have prema for Lord, then He is controlled by you. So these two are considered as the primary qualities based on which all the uddipanas are there. Like all the qualities act as what? It is uddipana. Uddipanas.
It means, well, you have the alambana and uddipan.
Yes,
so when the alambana is that I'm servant of the Lord and He's the master, then the uddipans will, then you are appreciate Him and everything. Okay, nice.
So because here it is mentioned, this is the main, and this is the jiva's.
Okay, of the 64, then these are the main in reciprocating with the devotees. Okay. Right. You know, because the jiva is his surrender to the Lord of all the qualities, and the Lord is his reciprocation based on that loving service. Nice. That Piki Sambhava?
Yes.
You want us to come quickly to the Sambhava?
Yeah. Okay. Guys, you're talking all day. This is what Jiva Goswami says. Let's move on. No, it's good. You can see, it's even though this is technical, the Sandarbha is actually higher.
Yes.
They're also very sweet, you know.
Yeah.
They're not dry. Like
it's the same thing, but in a sweeter. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like you have a nice fresh apple, or you have the apple, you take it, you put it in the oven, you dry it until it turns into powder. That's Vedanta Sutra. Still apple. Yes.
Achinta Bhedavi.
Yes. Simultaneously one and different. Now you can see with the acharyas and everything that it becomes better. But you can imagine making a lifestyle out of this study. That's all they have, and they don't have the acharya's commentaries.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just mental speculation.
Yeah.
You can see why they say it's a hellish existence. You know, the karmi and his desire, the jnani and his mental speculation. Like that, yeah. Without this, there cannot be any peace or tranquility in the world. Right? Without that surrender to the Lord, accepting His supremacy and agreeing to render loving service. Srila Vyasadeva is advised by Srila Narada to expand this idea in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same idea is explained. Surrender fully unto the lotus feet of the Lord. That is the only business of the perfect human being. Okay, so that finishes there. Okay, so Sutra 2223. The Buddhist concept of liberation is refuted.
This was the previous commentary.
Oh, this is the commentary of the previous one. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.18.5. O Lord, although you are completely detached from the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of this material world, and are not directly affected by these activities, they are all attributed to you. We do not wonder at this, for your inconceivable energies perfectly qualify you to be the cause of all causes. You are the active principle in everything, although you are separate from everything. Thus, we can realize that everything is happening because of your inconceivable energy. Yes, so that point, the active principle in everything. That's what makes things attractive in everything. Where we get disappointed is that the external doesn't match what we're this active principle, the primary aspect that we're looking for. Right? We're dealing with something, we expect that will give us happiness. But then dealing with the external form that potency is coming through, we don't get happiness. Right? Because we're attributing it to the secondary, the external. Right? And we're not connecting it to the primary, which is the source of that happiness. Right? Krishna is Anandamaya. Right? So when you connect to him, then you get that happiness. So you're following that principle, trying to gain that principle, but not actually connecting that principle to the Lord. Right? So we don't even actually see the real principle. We just see the qualities of the real principle. Because Brahman is the effulgence of Krishna's qualities. Right? The impersonal aspect. So, those qualities are what we're looking for. And then, looking for those qualities, then we deal with the secondary, you know, the mechanics of the world, trying to attain those qualities. But unfortunately, when you separate those qualities from the Lord, you don't see them in that context, you won't get that eternal happiness that comes from connecting with the Lord through those qualities and activities. So we perform the activities. We and strive for those qualities. Does that make sense? You know, like happiness or satisfaction or, you know, community or, you know, whatever it is, efficiency or opulence or security, whatever it is, we're going for those things through the secondary. But we're not seeing those connected to the Lord. So then they take on the material nature. They don't give you the satisfaction. But if the mechanics are done as service to Krishna, those qualities that are being then are part of that are also connected to Krishna, so then you get all that experience, the eternal experience. So,
Well, and if you don't get happiness, you have only two options. I have a DMD, don't you?
We don't. Yeah, well, generally is first you go for karma, then you go for jnana. Then you go for Buddhism. So, what is it? Bhaya, Raga, Vita, Krodha. Vita, Raga, Bhaya, Krodha. One of those. So, Raga, attachment, when that doesn't work, then you get Bhaya, you know, fear, or fear of that relationship with the Lord, so that independence, that's the impersonal. And then Krodha is anger, you throw out the other two. Right? Because when we say it non-Vedic, means it's throwing out both karma and jnana. And because then we're saying we just come from material energy, then that means all there is for the living entity is actually enjoyment of material energy. So it actually then produces the desire for sin. You know, so you come back around to karma, but you're not on the pious platform, you're on the sinful. And then from that, then you'll move up to piety, then from piety to the impersonalism, then from like, so it just goes in a circle. So the Buddhism is always there. That's what I mentioned. It's always been there. It's just a matter of, at some point, it may become popular. Right? By the modes. But it's always there, because there's always living entities who are in that position. Right? But just because people like, you know, living entities are social animals, and they like to do things together, so they all become Buddhists together.
I was just contemplating that sometimes some people come to devotional service And all they hear is, no, you should not perform karma, you should not perform jnana. And they adopt this Buddhism. And when they go back to sinful life more even.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just a matter of you hear what you want to hear. Because
yes.
The point is that, okay, let us say that person. Let's just take that person. They come to Krishna consciousness, they only hear that, then they take that, they give up Krishna consciousness, become Buddhist. Now, they have that desire, but in their own trajectory of their own material path, how quickly would they get to Buddhism? You understand? Not very quickly. But by coming to Krishna consciousness, now they can very quickly get there. Right? So it's only through bhakti you actually get everything you want. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Vyasadeva is advised by Srila Narada to expand this idea in the Bhagavatam. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same idea is explained. Surrender fully under the lotus of the Lord. That is the only business of the perfect human being. Right? It means you have others, then it's not perfect. You can do it. You may have other ideas, but it actually won't bring human life to its actual perfection. Right? People are always trying to perfect human life. You know, in the knowledge, in the culture, the economics, the sense gratification, the arts, the sciences. But you can only do that if there's surrender to the Lord and devotional service. That perfects the life of a human being. Otherwise, the animals are for other things, you know. You like, how you say, yeah. But, okay. Sutra 2.2.23. The Buddhist conception of liberation is refuted. Upayata cha doshat. Upayata, in either case, cha and doshat, because there are objections. In both ways, their concept of liberation fails because of fault. Right, so it means it's going on the previous aspects. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar explains the Buddhist concept of liberation arising from knowledge, pratishankhya nirodha, renders their conception of causeless destruction, apratishankhya nirodha, useless. And if liberation arises by itself, then the meditation of Buddhists is useless. You know, if you're going to become liberated anyway, why do you have to become a Buddhist? Hence, their concept is faulty. Right? So, by knowledge, then it's there, because then causeless destruction is... If by gaining knowledge you get liberation, then how does causeless destruction come up? Because you're learning this knowledge, then you're supposed to get liberated. They'll consider that positive, right? But then destruction, everything's destroyed, then that's a negative. Okay. And so then, the causeless destruction, because it's causeless, it could happen instead of getting liberation. All the knowledge you get, it could just go away because it's destroyed. Right? So therefore, then, that's not going to work. And then if you say liberation comes by itself, then what do you need this whole process for?
You can just wait.
Yeah, you just wait. If you wait long enough, then at some point...
Wait and see.
Yeah, wait and see. You can join those guys that are waiting for Godot, right? If he doesn't show up, maybe liberation will, right? You know.
They're very confused people, actually.
No, they're quite confused. Quite confused.
This philosophy seems to be the best thing to adopt for the modern kind of people who are emotionally so weakened. Don't do anything.
Yeah, it means what defines you as a Buddhist means, because in other words, if you take the popular, what you know many in the modern culture are coming from, we're meaning these kind of the economic background, the concept of it, not necessarily the driving force of it, but the element is that there is no definition of, you know, technically religion. What they do, what they eat, what they wear, how they talk, how they interact, nothing. There's no definition. So then in this, you can also find a similarity of there's no, technically no definition. There may be some practices, but the philosophy doesn't require it. You know what I'm saying? The rituals that they perform, you don't require those for this. So then you can easily integrate that into a religionless religion. Does that make sense? An undefined religion like that. So it goes very nicely, because basic point is that just become nice. That's the whole point, is to get those who, the smartas who become these Karmakanda Brahmins, who have become very violent, to get them to become peaceful. So if someone appreciates peacefulness, then the Buddhism will work for them. Like that. Sri Govindabhasya, Siddhanta. The word na, not, from Sutra 19 is understood. In this and three following sutras. Right, so this na from Sutra 19, it applies to this one and to these next three. Right, so that all these overlaps, okay. Buddhists say that liberation is destruction of avidya and the rest of the cycle, which is the cause of rebirth. Does liberation arise from na? So destruction of avidya, so that means causeless destruction then would have to be destroying itself to become liberation, right? Because you have to get rid of, the avidya has to be completely gone for there to be vidya.
Yes.
Right? But the avidya is the cause of all the destruction and everything like that.
Yes.
But then how does, since destruction is caused by avidya, how would you produce vidya from that?
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? That's the problem, is because this thing is one has to, is gone, then only the next can come. It's not that it's transforming, like we'll say.
Yes.
It's just the one disappears and then suddenly the other one appears.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Does liberation arise from knowledge of the truth, or does it arise on its own? It cannot arise from knowledge, because then the acceptance of the concept of causal destruction, aprati shankya nirodha, would be useless. Right? Because there's just destruction happening on its own. Ignorance just controls everything. But then how would knowledge be able to control that? Because destruction is, it just happens on its own.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It cannot arise on its own, since then the practices prescribed in Buddhist teachings would be useless. Right? So then why would you have Buddhist practices if liberation comes on its own? Therefore, the concept of liberation is invalid, since it does not stand up to scrutiny either way. Ubhayata. Right? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. Bhagavatam 2.10.6. The merging of the living entity, along with his conditional living tendency, with the mystic lying down of the Mahavishnu, is called the winding up of the cosmic manifestation. Liberation is the permanent situation of the form of the form of the living entity after he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material bodies. Right? So actual liberation is when he gives up this cycle of birth and death. Because otherwise, even though it winds up into Mahavishnu, that's just called, you could call that liberation, because now he's out of the material. But you don't, you just call it winding up of the cosmic creation. Right? And then it'll manifest again, then he'll come out again. Even though he's in the Vasudeva Sattva state, he's not technically liberated. Because it's just waiting for a body. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like waiting in line at the fast food place. You know, you don't have anything, but, you know, so you're just kind of in a neutral state. You're waiting. So as soon as you're first in line, then things start. You know, the karma starts.
We were discussing about the fourth destruction, and ultimate destruction hasn't happened.
Yes, so that's the whole point. So actual, when it says here, liberation. Permanent situation. Liberation is the permanent situation in the form of the living entity. Right? Because it mentions a form. After he gives up the changeable, gross, and subtle material body. So that's the actual destruction. Right? So they were the What were the destructions? Oh, the day of Brahma?
Yeah.
The life of Brahma, or this where it winds up? Then time?
That is
the continuous? Okay, every moment everything's being destroyed and like this. And then there's ultimate liberation. Okay. So what was the first one called?
Occasional.
Okay, then?
Elemental.
Then continuous. And ultimate. Okay.
So then, when the jiva is in Vasudeva Tattva, that time he will not be having those two members, Sukshma Sharir, but the Karan Sharir will be there. In real liberation, then all three will not be there.
Yes, there's no Karan Sharir. You had something? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur enlightens on the definition of Nirodha and Mukti. Nirodho Shyanu Sayanam Atmana Saha Shakti Bihi Muktir Hitvan Yatarupam Svarupena Yavastitihi. Nirodha refers to the merging of the jiva along with his material identity into the Lord at the time of final devastation of the universe. So that's what we're meaning. Everybody gets to experience this position. Right? When you're in the material world, then the karma is the main thing. Right? Then, at the destruction of the world, then the Nirodha, and everything goes into Mahavishnu, then there's that experience. Right? That's like deep sleep. Then you have, during the primary creation, then the living entities are there before the secondary creation, they're in the Vasudeva Sattva, they experience that liberated aspect. But it's all within the context of the material world, the material consciousness. Because it says merging the jiva along with his material identity. So that's the thing, is all these three will have the material identity. So, yeah. Mukti means the jiva's attainment of his pure form as pure Atma, or as an associate of the Lord, after giving up gross and subtle material bodies. So that's beyond these three. Right? Nirodha refers to the sleeping, merging of the jiva along with his subtle coverings, following after the Lord's sleep. This refers to the jiva's merging of the Lord after the protection period, stitihi, is complete. Mukti refers, because he protects. It says the Lord protects, because that's how, that maintenance. It doesn't, it's not destroyed. And then when that period's over, then it is destroyed. Mukti refers to the condition in which the jiva remains in his pure form, or in the form of an associate of the Lord in some cases, after giving up the gross and subtle bodies of maya. Sardartha Darshani 2:10:6. Okay. So they're looking for this, the concept of Nirodha. In other words, anything you come up with, like a dream, it's going to be made of something of an experience in reality. Right? What I experienced during the day, put together, the situations, the emotions, the experiences, all these different things, and then you come up with a dream with this strange mix of all that. Right? So, then all these things that they come up with, these philosophies, and other, ideas of religion and that, are based on actual experiences that are there, that they've gone through, or I think are defined in the Vedas. Just because it's in an illusory state, they put it together in a very strange way. So you see, as the more it goes, deviates from the Vedic version, the more dreamlike it becomes. So there's no continuity, the Vedic philosophies, there's a general continuity. But at some point they fall apart. But when you go outside the Veda, you'll see that they have even less continuity. It's just an idea here and an idea there, and it's just enough to inspire you. And so you don't notice that there's a huge gap between the two and they can't be put together. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srimad Bhagavatam 7:7:37. The real problem of life is the repetition of birth and death, which is like a wheel rolling repeatedly up and down. Right, because you're going up the wheel, then you're going down the wheel. Like that. This wheel, however, completely stops when one is in touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In other words, by the transcendental bliss realized from constant engagement in devotional service, one is completely liberated from material existence. All learned men know this. Therefore, my dear friends, O sons of the Asuras, immediately begin meditating upon and worshipping the Supersoul within everyone's heart. Right? So these are the instructions, you know, the Vedantic instructions of a five-year-old to his classmates who are also like the same. Yeah. Yeah. So it can be done. In fact, it's actually easier. Sutta 2224. So, therefore, you give up all this. What is it? They're trying to stop the cycle of birth and death. Fine. But they're trying to do it without surrendering to the Lord, without devotional service. As we mentioned before, these are the main qualities of the Lord that we, the jiva, reciprocates with. The others, then, their manifestation and all that, they'll go along with that. Like when they're surrendered to the Lord, then that will mean that they'll be the other 25 qualities, you know, depending upon the mood and the situation, will be manifest. So same with the Lord, his reciprocation, loving reciprocation, then so many other qualities may be manifest depending upon the particular situation and pastime. So if you surrender the Lord, take up devotional service, that will free you from birth and death. These other methods, they're useless. Just like absolutely useless. Sutta 2224. The concept of akasha as complete non-existence is refuted. Right? So now they're going. So you see, what's the fun part is, right? The Vedic philosophies, when push comes to shove, they shift over to the Buddhists. Now the Buddhist ones, when theirs start falling apart, they shift over to the Vedic. Now they're talking about akasha and all these other things like that. Well, the other ones start talking about the void and the, yeah.
So. Because in the previous sutra they mentioned that there are three types of absolute non-existence.
Absolute non-existence.
Pratisankhya Nirodha, or Pratisankhya Nirodha, and third was Akash. So then there it was being said by Baldev Devotion that we are going to refute it somewhere else. So this is where we are refuting.
Okay, well now we're refuting the Akash.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's just interesting to see how they.
Yes.
They
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some life.
Yeah. Akashe. Chavishe shat. Akashe, in the case of Akash, cha and avishe shat, because of no specific difference. Postulating non-existence as Akash is invalid because it has qualities like any other substance. Sutta Prakashika. The Sutrakar herein defeats the opponents who preserve their notion about Akasha as non-existence. Akasha shelters sound and air. Sound and air are real, hence Akash is real and is existence. Who is the shelter of Akash? Can something give shelter to itself? This was answered by the Sutrakar previously in Vedanta Sutra 1122, Akashastalingata. Herein is confirmed that Akash, ether, the shelter of sound and air, refers to Brahman, and not ether as in the ordinary sense. Since ether cannot be the shelter of itself, hence Akash refers to Brahman. Because we see all these names actually are names of Krishna. But because he has expanded that particular potency or qualities into various situations and various entities, whether they're living or not, then because that's we're able to perceive that quality there, that entity takes on that name.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? No? Yeah. So just like he is the life force, so he's jiva. So because then the living entities then show that thing of life force and we can perceive that, then they're known as jiva. You know, or his control of everything. Like that. Then that is, you know, that's Indra, that's the king. But then Indra, he has that potency of the Lord to work in that way. Therefore, he's known as Indra. But he's not the actual Indra, just like Akash isn't the actual Akash. It all goes back to Krishna. Krishna is the original of all these.
Yes. Yes. So we are always the second one.
Yes. Yeah, at least, if not. Yes. A few more back.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, Mahārāj, is the name, the are at the potency of Krishna. Means if we are aware of that, we can get the same mentality, same consciousness.
Yes.
And if we are not aware, so it means it's devoid of relationship.
Yes. It'll always be material, because you're dealing with the secondary. Yes. Material means you're dealing with secondary without primary.
Yes.
Spiritual means you're dealing with primary and expressing that through secondary. Because otherwise, what's the point? You know, Krishna goes out with the cowherd boys. They don't just float around in space. They go out into the forest of Vrindavan.
Yes.
So the secondary aspect is there. What do? They don't just sit there and, you know, in meditation and, you know, there's a natural, you know, how you say, meditational hum that they all, vibration that they all interact on. No, they actually run around and play games. And so the secondary is there. So the expression is there. The problem comes is we're trying to use that expression without Krishna. We're trying to just gain the happiness that comes from the mechanics itself. Because everything coming from Krishna, it has a small amount of that Satchit and Ananda in it. But we want to enjoy that small part of Satchit and Ananda that's inherent in the secondary, without connecting it to the primary.
Yes.
And so therefore, then it doesn't give any lasting experience.
Yes. Yes.
While the pure devotees, they're interested in serving Krishna, the secondary is used to serve Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but the happiness gained from Krishna, that interaction is so much greater than the happiness that comes from the interaction with the secondary. That that's not even important at all. It's there, but who cares? Does that make sense? Yeah.
In the Vedanta Sutra, first Adhyaya, the fourth part, we have seen one particular Adhikaran which mentions that all names are primarily names of Brahman and secondarily they refer to simpletons. So then this means that the potency of Krishna is in everything. We need to connect with so that we can actually realize it.
Yes, yes. Yes. Got that?
No.
No. That. In Vedanta Sutra, in the first chapter, then it's defining that all names are names of Brahman. And then as secondary, they're names of the items that we would attribute them to. Like that. So they're not primary names of Krishna. Because primary names of Krishna are names that are in relationship between him and the devotees. And secondary names are that his God or Brahman are like this.
Yes.
But then within that names of Brahman, then the names of Brahman are the primary, and then the secondary is when they're applied to that which we would say is the material phenomena.
Yes. Yes.
Even though it's Brahman, but we don't see that, then it's given that.
Yes.
Is that?
Yes. For example, like the atom. The modern scientists, they don't connect
With Krishna. So they only see that aspect, you know, or earth. He is the, you know. That's why he says he's the fragrance of the earth, he's the support, he's, you know.
Yes.
Oh, because that goes through all of those. Akashas talingat, yata eva pranaha. It's been a long time. Jyotish, yeah, Jyotish, yeah. Herein is confirmed that Akash, ether, the shelter of sound and air, refers to Brahman and not ether in the ordinary sense, since ether can't be the shelter of itself. Hence, Akash refers to Brahman. Shugovindabhasya. Siddhanta. It is impossible that they define Akash, space, as non-existence. Why? By perceiving a hawk flies in the space, one infers that Akash, with the quality of sound, is a real entity, the shelter of real objects. Just as it is seen that earth, because of actual existing, is the shelter of real fragrance. Water is the shelter of taste, fire of form, and air of touch. Right? Since you admit that air exists within ether, you contradict yourself by saying that ether does not exist. Right? Because otherwise, how does air exist in ether if there is no ether for it to exist in? Because you say one thing, it makes sense. You say it the other way, it doesn't make sense. So they only say it the one way. You know? It is not possible to say that Akash is mere absence of coverings, objects within it, since that is not reasonable. Akash is neither previously non-existing, non-existing because of destruction, nor totally non-existent. It's just, you know, can't. The universe should be without Akash because it cannot be perceived, since there would be objects like earth, water, etc., covering it. Since the definition of Akash is no covering, means this is their definition. Right? Moreover, by the absence of Akash, space, earth, and other elements would not be perceived. By the presence of Akash, space, earth, and other elements would not be perceived. What do you mean? They're saying if Akash is present, you wouldn't be able to perceive these other things? Yes. How do they come up with this stuff?
It's like,
you know, it's like, I mean, are they, how you say, you know, are they meeting, you know, Don Quixote or something? Or, you know?
So they also say that because Akash is being covered by earth, water, etc., so the universe will be completely void, you know, like.
Because it's covered.
Huh?
Akash is covered.
Yeah, Akash is covered by earth, water, fire, air. These coverings.
But how can nothingness be covered by something?
That's what they say.
Yeah, that's it's just, it's, yeah. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, it seems that since a few days at least, it's only about four elements.
Only about?
About four means air, water...
Yes. They don't. Akash. You see, they always leave out Akash.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they say it doesn't exist. So that's one of the forms of non-existence. So through knowledge, then there'll be non-existence, and then through just the natural destruction of everything, there's non-existence, and then through Akash, there'll be non-existence. But somehow or another, it's not necessary.
Because earth, water, fire, air is possible. Whereas Akash is not possible. That is the reason why they just side it out, saying it is non-existent.
Okay.
But even Acharyas give the example that if 3-4 birds are flying in the sky, then in the space we find that even the space has been divided because of the birds being flying. So the objects are present, that means there is space.
Yes.
And we are not able to just discriminate or perceive, you know, what is the space, because that's not within our vision.
Okay.
But still it is existing.
Okay. Okay, but now if a space is there, then they're saying earth and other elements would not be perceived. But it's because of space, then you can perceive them.
Yes.
Oh, well. It cannot be mutual non-existence. No objects in space and no space in objects. Because one would then not perceive space between the various objects. If you maintain that Akash exists when there is the absence of coverings, then it becomes a real object, since it would be distinguished by lack of coverings. So now you say it's non-existence, but then you get rid of all the coverings, then it exists, but then that means it does have existence. Right? But then they're saying it doesn't exist. So, yeah. Thus, Akash, like earth and other elements, has real existence. It is not something non-existent. Bhagavatam verse reference. 3:26:32. When egoism, in ignorance, is agitated by the sex energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the subtle element sound is manifested, and from sound come the ethereal sky and the sense of hearing. From the Bhagavatam. The activities and characteristics of the ethereal element can be observed as accommodation for the room for the external and internal existences of all living entities, namely the field of activities of the vital air, the senses, and the mind. Right? So then the external activities is accommodated by the space in the room, and then the internal activities of the life force, the senses, and the mind, they can all be accommodated in that space.
Footnote
32. Srila Prabhupada describes ether as the subtle foundation of the grosser forms. The mind, the senses, and the vital force, or living entity, have forms, although they are not visible to the naked eye. Form rests in subtle existence in the sky. And internally it is perceived as the veins within the body and the circulation of the vital air. Externally, there are invisible forms of sense objects. The production of the invisible sense objects is the external activity of the ethereal element. And the circulation of vital air and blood is its internal activity. That subtle form exists in the ether has been proven by modern science, by transmission of television, by which forms of photographs of one place are transmitted to another place by the action of the ethereal element.
Mm-hmm.
That is very nicely explained here. So it means it's there. It's able to accommodate these things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they can transfer it through space, because
mm-hmm.
space is what accommodates these things.
Mm-hmm.
It's accommodating there. It's accommodating here. It can accommodate in between.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. The verse is the potential basis of great scientific research work, for it explains how subtle forms are generated from the ethereal element, and their characteristics and actions are, and how the tangible elements, namely the air, fire, water, and earth, are manifested from the subtle form. Mental activities or psychological actions of thinking, feeling, and willing are also activities on the platform of ethereal existence. The statement in Bhagavad Gita that the mental situation at the time of death is the basis of the next birth is also corroborated in this verse. Mental existence transforms into tangible form as soon as there's an opportunity due to contamination or development of the gross elements from subtle form. So as soon as you add the grosser elements, then you get the manifestation of it. But it's already there. Right? So the gross always comes from the subtle. So because the mind's already there, that form is already accommodated in ether. Therefore, then when the opportunity is there, then the external elements of earth, water, fire, and air, then it can manifest, because the ether will still be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Why is considered like mind is more subtler than ether? Like when we go first, I mean the five gross elements, which is the fifth is ether, then mind.
It seems so. But still, it needs space.
That means the material creation is like, no, the manifested things which we see consists of these five elements, and mind intelligence is something beyond it which has to manifest through this?
Yes. Because you see is that the false ego is already there before even the soul of creation starts, because without that ignorance you can't actually get involved in this.
So that false ego contains the aggregate of materialistic mind intelligence.
It's the concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer.
Okay.
That's the main thing, because the specifics are then what's there. Because then when you come into the material world, you get a certain portion of mind, and that you carry with you. So as long as you're here, you're working with the same bit of mind. It's not that you have different minds. No, it's the same mind.
Okay, to also explain that how in ego in ignorance develops the gross element.
Yes. So the ignorance. So that avidya develops all these things that will be then identified as the modes of nature. So the goodness, passion, and ignorance are still coming from avidya, from ignorance. You know, that's outside of the material energy. Right, yeah. So.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.